Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively about to move into September, which means I don't have to eat crab cakes every day. We're going to do it once a week, the Maryland Crab Cake Tour, coming to a very zesty conclusion in Annapolis with Governor Larry Hogan on Monday. You can check out all of our crab cakes, all of the people, all the Ben Cardens, and all the Brandon Scotts and Johnny O's that we haven't even gotten to yet that we're going to get to next month that I ran into at the BMW Championship all weekend long. I got to out this guy here because, Luke, I was up in Cumberland, and we were having a crab cake with my friend Lenny up there who runs the Planet Fitness. We're sitting down in the Baltimore Street Grill, having a crab cake and some chicken wings and some beer, watching some bad baseball on the TV. And about 20 minutes into a conversation, Lenny's like, "Hey, man, I was at an event in Baltimore a couple years ago. I met Mike Tomlin, and I met Brian Billick, and I met John Harbaugh." And I'm like, "Yeah, dude, let me pull my hair back and we see if you recognize me now." Like, it's like the Tesla song. I take off my hat and imagine that, you know? And he's like, "I got pictures with all of them that night. I was drinking a little, but I got pictures." So he shows me all the pictures. "You're in all the pictures." He cropped me out of all of them because I was standing there and you had the seat. So I just want to let you know that a guy held up a picture of him and you in you know, from 4 years ago that I'm having dinner with. And he didn't even realize it was me, but he had a picture of you. So I just want to let you know that.
Oh, it's something about that whole face for radio thing. You've been on the radio much longer than I have. So maybe, you know, you didn't make the cut in that way. I don't know. But that's pretty cool, though. That's pretty cool. Seriously.
I thought it was cool. I thought everything was cool on the Crab Cake Tour. Friday, we fished with Dan Rodericks. I fly fished in a little town called Westernport. And I thought of you, Luke. You want to know why I thought of you?
Why?
I bet you've never been to this place. I'm going to Google map this right now, okay? And I'm gonna share the screen with our audience here just to have a good time with you, all right? And I'm going to put in a town called Luke, Maryland, okay? Luke, Maryland sits on the north branch of the Potomac River, okay? I'm not making this up. It is right next to the town of Westernport. And you can see all my crab cake places like Big Run State Park here. And Luke, Maryland is actually the home of this giant like production facility. It used to be a coal mine, then it became a paper mill that's now a little like at. So your name kept popping up. It's like Luke's Place. I have a picture in front of Luke's Place. And then on Friday night, I'm in Frederick. We're getting a crab cake and I look up above my wife and it's like 5:45 and Sandusky shows up and there's Rod Woodson. And there's Mike Nolan, and it's not even my show. And I'm like, 6 o'clock football on a Friday night. I didn't even think about it, right? It's on. I said to Jen, "Hey, let's get a crab cake. Let's get a beer." And then all hell breaks loose with the season. So I'll let you pick it up from there. But I had my mask on in the bar. I literally, to piss them off, I wish I had it in here. I just washed it. Had my Ravens mask on. Everywhere west of Frederick, it's all Steelers fans, Redskins, you know. So I'm wearing my mask. And one guy's like, "Hey, go Ravens." And I saw Dobbins roll over. I saw him grab the knee. There's no sound on in the bar. And I screamed so loud, my wife zhuzhed me because it was a nice place. And I'll let you pick it up from there because I spent the whole day out of Caves Valley, people coming up to me left and right. What's he doing in the game? Why is he playing? I can't believe it. It's preseason football, man.
Well, it is. At the same time, they've got to get ready to play football. And I don't know what the perfect solution is. I'll say this, for all the talk last year about not having a preseason, Tom Brady played this weekend. Patrick Mahomes played this weekend. So we're not seeing this dramatic pivot, although we've seen it go from 4 games to 3 games in the preseason.
The third game is still the third game.
We haven't seen this dramatic pivot. And I'm just talking about teams seeing what happened last year, and they say, "We don't need to play our starters at all." Because, and I was actually in the middle of a text chain with some of my dear friends from high school, and they're always asking me about the Ravens, and you know, about all I could tell them by around lunchtime was, "Look, I haven't heard anything official, but if you have a fantasy football draft today, don't draft J.K. Dobbins because you knew it was bad. You knew it was bad Saturday night." So, but for all the talk of last year, not having a preseason and understanding, look, all 32 teams, they didn't have a preseason, but that didn't mean that there weren't teams at different stages. I mean, I think back to week one last year, Cleveland, Kevin Stefanski, new coach, all this transition. They didn't have a normal preseason. They were awful. They were god awful against the Ravens week one. And what we learned was the Browns were actually pretty darn good last year. You know, I mean, we'll see what happens this year in the AFC North, but hey, they made the playoffs and won a playoff game just like the Ravens in that way. So what you have is teams that have all these different needs, all these different individuals, whether you have a young quarterback, an old quarterback, a quarterback coming off of an injury. And you say that at every position, right? You might have a new coaching staff. You might have a new coordinator. You might have a new offensive line. You might have a situation like the Ravens have had where their offensive line, you know, Ronnie Stanley hadn't played. So first of all, there are injuries at any point in the calendar year. I mean, Juwan James is a Baltimore Raven right now because he tore his Achilles back in the spring and Denver cut him as a result. So you have that. We can all remember players in OTAs going down for the season. We know what happens in training camp. We know what happens in the regular season. So it's always a little more pronounced in terms of the scrutiny when someone goes down in a preseason game. And look, me saying this is not saying guys should definitely play or shouldn't play, but I'll say this, that coach that doesn't play anyone at all in the preseason looks like a genius until guess what? His team gets pounded in week one and week three, and they lose three or four guys to season-ending injuries. And what does everyone say at that point? Well, those guys weren't in football shape because they didn't play in the preseason, and they've been coddled, and it's camp cream puff and all that. So my point is, injuries stink. They happen at any stage of the season, any stage of the calendar year. I certainly would not look at playing J.K. Dobbins being nearly as egregious as a 44-year-old Tom Brady or Patrick Mahomes being out there for their respective teams on Saturday or this weekend.
Lamar Jackson ran up the middle on the play before Dobbins got ripped up. I mean, those guys weren't out there long. And I tell you what, that field goal felt pretty anticlimactic at that point.
Right. Well, it ended up being a missed field goal by Jake Verity, who, you know, the Ravens are trying to get a, you know, trying to get a draft pick for or whatever it might
be. Trying to vetvig him.
My point is, whatever the outcome is, you're going to be second guessed whenever that outcome is undesirable. I don't know what the perfect sweet spot is in terms of navigating the preseason, which we always say it's kind of akin to, you know, to playing in traffic. I mean, especially for your star players, but as much as fans and even media to a certain degree, we know a hell of a lot of work goes into those guys being ready week one, those guys playing in week eight, those guys playing in week 17, week 18 now this year with a 17-game schedule. There's a lot of work that goes into that. And as much as you'd like to in a perfect world, you would just be able to put these guys in some little bubble or some pod that artificially they'd be ready to play football. It doesn't work that way. And it's really tough to get ready to play football without playing any football at all. So in that sense, you know, I'm certainly not going to sit here and beat up John Harbaugh about it because, like I said, this is groupthink. This is how teams handle this thing still, even after a year where they had no preseason and had a representative season. Clearly much more brilliant football minds than, you know, the little tiny little shred of football I might know feel that there's some value to it. Now, we're not talking about playing a guy four quarters or playing a guy behind his backup offensive line or anything like that. This is on the first Raven series, and it stinks, and it's unfortunate. And, you know, we'll get into the ramifications of this in a moment. But at the same time, I still think it's really idealistic to just think you're going to hold everyone out of any danger whatsoever over the course of training camp and the preseason. And okay, you can do that. And maybe I thought of it. I was actually thinking about this earlier on Sunday. Look at the Naval Academy last year. And I know it was because of the pandemic, but we all remember they opened the season on Labor Day night against BYU and Ken Niumatalolo, who I respect so much, talked about the fact that they didn't tackle over the course of the summer. And again, it was because of COVID. We understand that, but you saw what happened when they went out there and they weren't ready to play football. They were completely embarrassed. So that's not to say you should play in the preseason, but you do run the risk of you don't put your guys out there. You know, that they might not be in as good a football shape as their opponent who played in all three preseason games. Well, then you lose games. So I don't know what the perfect solution is here. I don't know what the perfect sweet spot is here, but you know, the, you know, what's really unfortunate is the Ravens lose a guy who I think was pretty darn important to their season. Certainly not Lamar Jackson. I wouldn't put this at the Ronnie Stanley level last year because they still have Gus Edwards. And look, Lamar Jackson is the anchor of their running game. He's what makes their running game sensational. But I think J.K. Dobbins was rapidly developing into a 1A in that category as far as being a catalyst and being a dynamic home run hitter in this running game. So it's really unfortunate. And yeah, we'll continue and we'll table this till next August. We'll talk about the preseason then, but unfortunately, all the talk about the 20th straight preseason win, the Ravens came out losers on Saturday night because of what happened.
Well, the notion that he was going to be their first half running back and that Gus would be the second half finisher, you know, when you have a 14-point lead and you just move sticks and eat clock and the game ends at 3:40, you know, 1 o'clock kickoff and all that. A big component of that, but then you compound that with the wide receiver problems. You compound that with the fact that the offensive line hasn't been intact. You compound that with the fact that Lamar isn't vaccinated and they don't have a third quarterback and like all of these other down the level. But then there's the part where they're beating the living ish out of the former Washington football team 37-3, and the second team's beating the first team's ass, and the third team's beating the second team's ass. And you look up and you say, well, who are the red, whatever they're called these days, the PG counties, the Largos, the Ral Johns. And there was a point when my wife was a little pissed watching the replay, and it's early and say, man, shooting for the knees in a preseason. Well, like, you know, I don't know if Harbaugh came and said anything, but I would think when your player gets hurt in one of these games, you do go back and say, what are you guys doing? Like, how are you hurting my guy in a preseason game? Things happen. They're trying to tackle. Everybody's trying to make a team. I don't know clean from dirty, but I do know sort of gentlemen's agreements to some degree. We talked about this last week with Carolina and how hard you're going to go and, you know, where thud is and where half speed and full speed. And to your point, real tackling and real live contact. And when that happens for the first time to first team players, it probably is a little more thunderous than maybe you remember it when you've been playing with your own guys most of the time.
Yeah, and I think that's what's tough. And look, I looked at that probably 25 times from late Saturday night until the news really came, more so the confirmation. I think the body language for everyone, from J.K. being carted to the locker room to Harbaugh on the sideline.
The minute he grabbed his knee. I mean, I had no sound. My wife wasn't even watching the play. Like, she turned her back, and I just started screaming because he went down. And this, like, I just been watching football too. I mean, we all have, right? Well, and it's not like I'm Chicken Little. I can sort of eyeball it. And usually you're within heart distance of understanding it. And again, no sound on HG, just seeing it the second it happened. I'm like, that's bad. That's not 2 weeks bad. That's not turn an ankle bad. That was pop bad.
Yeah, I think what was interesting about it, for me, it was more so their reactions than the actual mechanism of the injury itself, because that injury to me looked reminiscent of George Kittle last year, who, you know, it hyperextension, bone bruise in the knee. And look, we're not talking about a week or two there. That would have, if that had been the outcome for J.K. Dobbins, you're probably talking October by the time he's coming back, in a best case scenario. You know, Joel Embiid for the 76ers back in March, you know, had a hyperextension that looked really bad and people feared the worst, and it ended up being the bone bruise, and he missed some time, but certainly not the rest of the season. But for me, it was much more his reaction, the doctor's reaction, Harbaugh's reaction on the sideline. That's where, because you don't have to be a doctor to know that the doctors know when there's a torn ACL. They do that Lachman test right on the field. They test the stability of the knee. You kind of see them bring the knee straight back toward their chest, and they can tell if it's unstable. And if it's unstable, 99% of the time they can diagnose he has a torn ACL. And the MRI confirms that, and the Ravens were holding out hope late Saturday night, but you knew that. But I think it's unfortunate because of what you just mentioned, all the other issues that they've had with their offense. from Lamar missing the first 10 days, which at this point, I don't think him missing that practice time was the issue as much as, he's not vaccinated and people will keep talking about that until he's either vaccinated or something else happens at some point, close contact, whatever it might be. But dude, beyond
believing science, I I'm never just going to let that slide as just a personal decision. It's stupid. But,
we've been over this, though. Right. Sure.
But what it does to the organization from a stability standpoint, a gambling standpoint, a long-term prosperity, it's a problem. And I'm never going to not portray it as a problem because
I don't disagree.
One of those, unlike injuries and everything else that can crop up during the year, this is sort of a problem you're inviting.
Well, and again, for me, it's not even about him getting infected again at some point. It's the close contact. I mean, and we've seen that with players around the league this summer. I mean, even guys not testing positive, but if they're unvaccinated, close contact situation, you're out 5 days. That happens on a Friday. You're out for that Sunday's game.
It's that simple. Personal friend of yours and mine that tests positive falsely and gets shut down for 3 or 4 days.
Correct.
To happens to be on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, they don't get the practice, or they pop on a Friday and can't play on a Sunday because they don't pee clean enough. I mean, this is going to be
It is.
Again,
we'll have plenty of
right on it. Oh, God bless them. That's all I can.
We'll continue to talk about this, I'm sure, but we've been over this over and over. But you look at the rest of the offense, the wide receivers. I mean, Marquise Brown has been out since the second day of training camp. Now, he's been running on the field for the better part of close to 3 weeks now. I think he's very close to returning. I don't think there's, this isn't a Breshad Perriman where he's disappeared for the last month, where that was.
It feels like he's a rookie, but he ain't, I mean, he's played a lot of football. He's been in this offense a long time. Nobody in this team has caught more passes from him, from Lamar than him.
Well, Mark Andrews too. Sure. But wide receiver.
They're buddies. They're hanging out in Florida. I mean, I'm just saying if there is such a thing as chemistry that the light should turn back on 2 years into this thing,
yeah,
it should be them. It should be.
Yeah. I mean, he has chemistry with him. I'd still say Mark Andrews has more chemistry with him.
I'm willing to buy
but
that
sure.
Things could be okay, that Hollywood could catch 7 for 114 yards and 2 touchdowns in Las Vegas, and I wouldn't be shocked by that. I'd say, he was hurt. They'd had him running around. I feel much better about him than I do about Zeitler and Alejandro Villanueva and how they're playing together. And I think there's a lot more question marks than if Hollywood can run well, he'll be a factor in the game. And I think their defenses are going to have to play with him.
I think that's fair. Sure. I think that's fair. I wouldn't say that about Sammy Watkins because, and he hasn't missed a whole lot of time, but he's missed enough where he didn't play in the preseason and didn't get a chance to play in a live game setting with Lamar Jackson. So they've been really careful with him. We know Bateman is going to be out until, John Harbaugh said sometime in September. I'm guessing it's going to be October, just based on if they put him on short-term IR and all of that. But we're certainly not expecting to see him week one. So you have all that unsettled, just uncertainty at wide receiver, knowing what this passing game, what they're trying to do with their passing game. I mean, you see Lamar, he's out there throwing to guys that he's not going to be throwing to come the regular season, or you hope not, because that means that these injuries have carried over or they have new injuries. So you have that. You mentioned the offensive line. It was great to see Ronnie Stanley out there for 10 plays. He moved around pretty well, but how close is he to pre-injury form? You mentioned Zeitler and Villanueva. I feel fine about Zeitler at this point. Villanueva, the transition to right tackle, we'll see. As much as the Ravens tried to put on a good front and say, we're trading away Orlando Brown, but look who we brought in. I mean, the guy who's been a Pro Bowl left tackle, and now we're going to move him to right tackle. But let's face it, the Steelers had their offensive line issues the last couple of years. There was not much effort or much concern about him walking there. And Pittsburgh, like the Ravens, pretty good with talent evaluation. So we'll see. I'm not saying he can't do the job, but are there going to be some growing pains early on? So through all of this, with the offensive line, wide receiver, Lamar only playing one series in the preseason. What were we talking about even just a couple weeks ago, what they might lean on a little more? Their running game and J.K. Dobbins being one, and Gus Edwards, isn't really the backup. It's 1 and 1A. I mean, Gus has rushed for over 700 yards each of the last three seasons. He's averaged over 5 yards per carry each of the last three seasons. I think there's a very sound argument to make that Gus Edwards absolutely can carry a bigger workload. And depending on if he was somewhere else, would be a starting running back and maybe a 1,000-yard rusher and things of that nature. However, you lose that home run element, that element, what J.K. Dobbins did for them down the stretch. I mean, this was a guy who, over the last five games, when they won five in a row to qualify for the postseason and rally, he was averaging 85 rushing yards per game. He led all NFL running backs in yards per carry last year as a rookie. Now, granted, it wasn't the same workload as Derrick Henry, but he was very explosive, very efficient, and we know how creative their running game got. With what they were doing early on with Mark Ingram, that wasn't working quite as well because they didn't have Marshall Yanda anymore and they were struggling to run between the tackles. They started to run more outside. We saw those formations where Dobbins would line up in the slot and motion across the formation and take the handoff from the pistol and he's off, almost like a wide receiver, except it's a running back taking that ball and being shifty.
Ray Rice
so
had sort of that ability. Sure. And every time I see 27, sure. You think of how many guys were, and Jamal was so big, but right. It could be a home run threat when they touch the ball that linebackers are worried about getting run past. Safeties are worried about getting run past. Maybe not over as much as like a Derrick Henry or that sort of thing, but I feel like he was the best back they've had here since Ray Rice. Would you agree with that?
I think that's fair. I mean, I think he still had to prove it because, you're still talking about a rookie year where, okay, he averaged 6 yards per carry, but he wasn't carrying the ball 25 times a game or anything like that. That's not to say he was going to do that this year, but to me, I kind of looked at where Mark Ingram was 2 years ago. Go back and look. Right around 1,000 yards, right around 200 carries, had 10 touchdowns, whatever it was. I mean, he had receiving touchdowns too. I can't remember the exact number. He had a boatload of touchdowns for them. He was a Pro Bowl running back. And I could easily have foreseen J.K. Dobbins being that this year in terms of being, let's say an 1,100-yard back. Not that he's going to, he's not going to be Jamal Lewis and carrying it 30 times a game, but he certainly was going to get it more. And I think that was conceivable that he could have been 1,050, 1,100, 1,150 rushing yards and a bunch of touchdowns. And that element that they've talked about a lot this offseason as far as him being a receiver out of the backfield, which is something that they haven't done a whole lot of. And if you're talking about a passing game that, doesn't have the wide open Kansas City throw it all over the field. And we know Lamar's not throwing outside the numbers and doing, every single route on the route tree as far as what they run. Running to the back or throwing to the backs seemed to be a pretty logical next step. And now that's gone. And to be very clear, I still expect this running game to be excellent. I think you look back to 2018. Remember when Joe Flacco gets hurt and Lamar Jackson's taken over at that Cincinnati game after the bye. At that point in time, the Ravens as a team were averaging 3.6 yards per carry. They ranked 27th in the NFL in rushing yards per game. J.K. Dobbins was still at Ohio State at that point. Lamar Jackson is what makes this running game special, but it's not as special now without having that J.K. Dobbins element that really was an X factor for them down the stretch. I think Gus Edwards can do an excellent job. We'll see if they bring in another running back. I mean, I do like what I saw from Tyson Williams. He was on the practice squad last year. I think he runs hard. We saw the impressive touchdown he had against Carolina, but he was on the practice squad last year, and he's never carried in an NFL regular season game. He's never played in one. So do they look to bring in a veteran? If you recall, they visited with Todd Gurley earlier in the summer. I don't know how much is left with the knee. I know talking to people in the organization, I think he's someone that they said he could be an option for us. But
yeah, it's like if Ingram hits the street again, he's not back, right?
Yeah. But he's not going to carry 150, 200 times for you. He's not going to be the guy he was for the Rams four years ago. So
think of some of the names of the guys, like when Jamal got hurt, the guy from the Redskins, what was his name? Was it James?
Terry Allen. Yeah.
We've had Jason
Brookins.
Forsett was a little bit of one of those kind of senior citizen guys. We've had like a handful of them over the years. I don't know. Ingram was that sort of 3 years ago, right?
Sure. But here's the difference. I mean, and this is why I don't at all compare this to Jamal Lewis, because let's face it, Jamal Lewis was their entire offense. J.K. Dobbins isn't their entire offense. And let's be clear, and I'm not saying that to be disrespectful. I think Dobbins is a heck of a talent. This is a bad thing for them. I don't want to be dismissive of it, but Gus Edwards is a guy who's averaged over 5 yards per carry in his career. You look at him from an analytics standpoint in terms of yards after contact per carry and short yardage situations, goal line. There are lots of numbers about him, if you kind of dig deeper into his profile, that suggests that, okay, yes, in the way that even Nick Chubb or Adrian Peterson in his prime or any running back you want to name today, Derrick Henry for that matter, any of those guys would be better with Lamar Jackson as their quarterback, because we just know the mesh point and the threat of him taking off. Everyone on the defense.
Derrick Henry.
It'd be crazy.
Imagine that. That's
be crazy.
And I think Dobbins was that, but more. But I love the way that they put this together, and probably even more so now that the kid's ripped his knee up. The fact that he wasn't primary. I mean, if Derrick Henry rips his knee up, Tennessee's done.
Right. You have a running game that's going to be very productive. I still think they'll be the top ranked, rushing yards per game and all of that. I don't think that's going to change even without Dobbins. However, what have we been talking about throughout the offseason? This is going to bring me back to my theme, my takeaway with this. They need to be more dynamic. They need to be more special, specifically in the passing game. But Dobbins gave them that element, a little extra something with their rushing attack down the stretch last year. But it comes down to this. We know for this team to take the next step in January is going to come down to what? Their perimeter passing game growing. Their ability to throw when they're off schedule. We've talked about it now for 2 years. Going back to...
By the way, they won't have to do that if they have a lead. You know what I mean?
Well, sure, but...
At that point when you're behind, because they haven't...
But you're going to lead it, but you're going to trail at some point. We know that, Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs trail at times. And look, when you trail,
passing game's working, that's when you're ahead.
Sure, but we know that's going to happen. If that doesn't happen, I'm guessing they lose in the divisional round again. I don't think their passing game is good enough as it was constructed in 2020 to win the Super Bowl. In 2019, it was more efficient than it was last year. And it wasn't good enough then, although I would kind of point to the Tennessee game and say, well, turned it over 4 or 5 times, whatever it ended up being. You're usually going to lose in that setting, in a playoff game when you turn it over that much. But my point is, J.K. Dobbins, whether he was on the field or not, this team was going to have to evolve and improve and grow its passing game. That does not change now. What does change, however, is the urgency in doing that, because Dobbins did have that little bit of an X factor, little bit of a transcendent talent to that running back position that, as much as I love Gus Edwards, as much as I think the other guys they have or someone else they bring in can do a decent job because of what you said. I mean, it was Mark Ingram a couple years ago, and go back and they had Ty Montgomery running the ball and Kenneth Dixon running the ball in 2018. And they had different guys that had success with Lamar Jackson.
Now. You're coming up with, I knew you're going to go Bobby Rainey on me here.
Well, I mean, not quite, but I'm just talking about the guys that have played with Lamar. I mean, Gus Edwards, go look at what Gus Edwards, first of all, Gus Edwards started 2018 on the practice squad. He had played a little bit in Flacco's last few starts. He had 15 carries for 64 yards. Now, you look at those numbers and say, hey, compared to Alex Collins, who wasn't doing the job and was kind of hurt and not what he had been the year before.
God, the Irish dance. God.
Yeah. But my point
has been more of a swinging door than maybe we realize.
But my point is, look at overnight, just inserting Lamar Jackson into the starting lineup. Their running game went from lousy to unbelievable, meaning best in the NFL. So J.K. Dobbins wasn't the key to that, but J.K. Dobbins raised the ceiling for that running game to not just make it really good, but to make it special, to make it historic the way it was at the end of last year. I mean, we all remember that Bengals game, and let's face it, that offensive line, as much as they found their stride a little bit as run blockers late in the season, we know the offensive line had its issues. So now you fast forward, knowing you don't have Dobbins, I think Gus Edwards will still do a hell of a job. I think he'll get more carries. I don't know if he's going to get all the carries, but he's going to be the main guy. We'll see if they bring someone else in. We'll see how Tyson Williams does. We'll see if Justice Hill.
Football Insider brought to you by Baltimore Luke. Draft Gus Edwards now. Was that your?
Well, I mean, to me, yeah. I mean, I think it's common sense you're going to draft Gus Edwards. But the point is, now, does that running game look as special? Well, I would say there's one way it could be, but you're not going to like the risk involved. That would be Lamar Jackson running the ball a little bit more and getting back to maybe where he was 2 years ago. Over the course of a full season,
15 carries.
Which, you know, I don't think you really want that. So if that's not going to be it, what does it come down to? The passing game. And well, we knew that all along, but now this just brings us back to all the issues they've had over the course of the summer with the receivers being out, the offensive line not playing together a whole lot. And let's be clear, this isn't me writing them off. This is, you now look at week one and week two against Kansas City, especially, and you do wonder what that offense is going to look like and how much firepower it's going to have, knowing that you've taken what in my mind was a guy who had a great chance to be a Pro Bowl quality running back out. And now it's just Gus Edwards. And now, heaven forbid, if something happens with Gus Edwards, then you're talking about the 2001 scenario where Terry Allen and Jason Brookins and Mo Williams and Chris Barnes, who got cut at the end of training camp. And because, you know, everyone remembers that year. I mean, you had Jamal Lewis, Priest Holmes went on to join the Kansas City Chiefs and became a Pro Bowl running back there, but they had no depth there. So the difference is here, you still do have Gus Edwards. Of course, you have Lamar Jackson, who's still the straw that stirs the drink here. We know that. But yeah, they're going to miss Dobbins for that perimeter element that was just so huge for them down the stretch last year.
Only took six extra holes for Cantley to defeat DeChambeau on Sunday afternoon. Luke has been doing all things Dobbins. And, I know the Crab Cake Tour, which is now ending, and we're getting ready for this Las Vegas game. We're going into Labor Day weekend here. I know people are saying, all you guys are talking about is that running back. The defense is going to win the Super Bowl, and they won 20 preseason games in a row. So I'll tell you what, we'll get to that. Luke is here. Baltimore Luke's the way to find him. Luke at WNST.net. He'll be in Owings Mills all week. Final cuts, rosters, all of that stuff. Some looks at COVID and ahead and Vegas and gambling, maybe even a little bit of Orioles, but certainly a little bit about that Ravens defense, because if they are going to win, it's going to be the defense. You can email me anytime, nasty at WNST.net. Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Snapchat, Instagram, anywhere you are. Our friends at Raskin Global are there. Our friends at Royal Farms is sponsoring us, as well as a Wise Mark. It's been an unbelievable month out on the road, taking care of sponsors, running into friends. We'll be telling you more about that as we really sort of get back into it here in September, beginning with a visit with Governor Larry Hogan. I am Nestor. He is Luke. We're talking football and more. We are WNST AM 1570 Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking Baltimore Ravens football and Baltimore positive.